Shabbos daf kuf nun hey. We are starting on kuf nun dalet amud beis. We're starting with the words lema ketanai. Gemara is right now in the middle of a discussion regarding tzadim using the side, specifically that of a tree and that of an animal. We've learned a Mishnah in Beitza. Rashi in yesterday's daf quoted this Mishnah in Beitza, which teaches us that on Yantav and it goes without saying on Shabbos as well, one is not allowed to be mishtamish. One cannot make usage of either an ilan or behema, neither a tree or that of an animal. One cannot climb up a tree and one cannot ride an animal on Shabbos. Rashi quotes the Mishnah, L'roch min agabe behema, the Mishnah in Beitza, daf lamed vav lamed aleph. One is not allowed to ride an animal on Shabbos, and that means that and not only is that include the riding of the animal, but even all other usages of the animal as well. And the same thing is true regarding a tree. One is not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos, and any usage of usages of a tree is also going to be prohibited as well. What is the reason behind the gzera? So in both circumstances, actually, interestingly enough, it's basically predicated on the same reason. If I climb up a tree, so I might go ahead and pull off a branch. If I ride an animal, so there too, I may actually pull off a branch. I understand we're riding an animal, and it's not a tree, but nevertheless, the concern is that while you are passing a tree, you're going to be pulling off a branch in order to goad the animal even faster. So suffice to say right now that there's a gzera derabanan that one is not allowed to make a usage neither of an animal nor of a tree. So, certainly this includes the top of an animal and the top of the tree. Does it also include the sides as well? And as we're learning together, it's possibly a machlokas. Well, we started off yesterday with noting that Rabbah took his child and slid him up and down the side of an animal. Presumably with Shabbos, either Shabbos or Yontif, but he slid him down the animal. And so when Abaye saw Rabbah doing that with his son, so Abaye says, I don't understand. Isn't there gzera derabanan? And Rabbah's response is, yes, there is, but I'm using the side of the animal, not the top of the animal. And the gzera derabanan is only covering the top of the animal, not the side of the animal. And that engendered the Gemara's discussion as to whether or not tzadim are going to be usser or mutter. And the Gemara now is going to suggest that this is subject to a machlokas tanaim, lema ketanai. So we pick it up right where we left off. And the Gemara now is going to be quoting a brisa. Ein olin la b'yamtov, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Amar Mishum Rabbi Meir, olin la b'yamtov. Going back to our topic of the discussion we had yesterday regarding the sukkah, whether a sukkah that is resting on the side of a tree, one of its walls, one of its three walls, is resting on the side of a tree, can I go up on such a sukkah on yamtov? And again, as we pointed out yesterday, the words going up is typically the word that's used to describe going into a sukkah, because typically the sukkah was built on the roof. Can we go up on such a sukkah? So machlokas tanaim. Tanakama says he cannot. Rav Shimon Elazar says he can. And what is the nekud hamachlokas between the two? So that's the Gemara suggestion. My laba hakimiflagi demand sabrat stad demasunim asavar mutaranin. Very well, it could be that the machlokas over here is whether or not the side of the tree is subject to the gzera derabanan of being mishamish be'ilan. And the one that says that it's asur, the Tanakama is subscribing to the idea that stadin is asur. And Rav Shimon ben Elazar, who says that it's mutter, is subscribing to the idea that tzadin is mutter. Amar Abaye lo. So Abaye says, not necessarily. Dekulei amar tzadin asur. And it could very well be that everyone's of the opinion that using the side of a tree would in fact be prohibited. V'hacha b'tzidei tzadin kamiflagi. Over here they're talking about something which is not directly connected to a tree, but connected to something which is connected to a tree. And what in halacha is described as tzidei tzadin. And we'll give examples, practical examples of that in just a moment. So according to Abaye, everyone is in agreement that one cannot make usage of the side of a tree, and that is included in the Gzera Derabanan of Ilan, of being Mishamish be Ilan. However, there is a machlokas in terms of using something that is attached to something which is attached to a tree. That's what's called Tzidei Tzadin, and Abaye says that's the machlokas Hatanayim. And so Abaye makes a clear distinction between Tzadin versus Tzidei Tzadin. Rav Amar, Rav disagrees, and Rav says, no, Manda Aser B'Tzadin, Aser Nami B'Tzidei Tzadin. And Manda Shari B'Tzidei Tzadin, Shari Nami B'Tzadin. Rav says, no, that if you subscribe to the idea that Tzadin is Aser, you're also going to be subscribing to Tzidei Tzadin being Aser, And if you subscribe to one being mutter, the other is going to be mutter as well. And that means that according to Rava, if I go back to the Braisa, our proposal, our original proposal of the Braisa, that the machlokes between the two is predicated on whether or not Stadden is us or Stadden is mutter, Rava says that original proposal is absolutely correct, meaning that there is no distinction to be made between Stadden and Tzidei Stadden, and so therefore our original proposal has to stand. The one that says that you can go on such a tree on Shabbos would subscribe to the idea that both Stadden and Tzidei Stadden are mutter, and the one that says that you cannot go on the tree is subscribing to the idea that both Stadden and Tzidei Stadden are going to be aser. And so what we have over here is a machlokes between Abaye and Rava vis-a-vis the idea that can we make any kind of separation between Stadden and Tzidei Stadden. Eitzvei v'mishar shel Rava, so the following challenge is now posed to Rava based on the following, and we're going to learn together now a little bit about Erevin, which is good. We're going to be starting the Masechta in just a couple days from now, although the topic of Erev Tchumim comes up a little bit later in the Masechta. But anyway, the idea behind Erev Tchumim is as follows. What you want to do is create for yourself a new Makom Shvisa. You're afforded 2,000 amos in every direction from your Makom Shvisa. And so what you want to do is you want to just simply move the center of the Makom Shvisa to another location, and you do so with an Erev Tchumim. We're going to be discussing this much greater detail in Masechta Erevin. In the meantime, however, the basic idea is that in order for Erev Tchumim to work, it's going to be a food that is going to be put down in your Makom Shvisa, in your new Makom Shvisa, and you have to be able to access that food on Bein Hashmashos period, during the Bein Hashmashos period. Now, when I say access to food, I mean both practically and halachically. And so that means to be that it means to say that the food has to be now in a position where you can obtain that food as Shabbos is commencing. And if there is anything that is going to prevent you from obtaining that food halachically, so then the Erev Tchumim is simply not going to work. And in order to illustrate that, so we're going to be learning a braisa together where Nas Yaseid B'ilan, so here, the case is that there's a peg that is stuck into a tree, v'talaba kilkala, and then you attach the basket to the peg, l'malam yasar tfachim, and the basket now is above 10 tfachim, ein, eruvo, eruv, the eruv is not going to be good eruv. And let's see how this works out, because the basket itself, we're assuming, is going to be an area of 4x4 tfachim. And the basket now is, if it's hanging above 10 tfachim from the ground, so the basket now has the proper dimensions of Rishos HaYachid. We're assuming that the ground underneath is going to be Rishos HaRabin. So if you were there during the Bein HaShemashos period, would you be able to take the food from the basket and bring it to you? And the answer, of course, would be no, because then you would be transferring from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaRabin. Since you are prohibited from accessing the Erev Tchum during the Bein HaShemashos period, so that means to say that it's simply not going to work for you as an Erev Tchum. And if the basket was below 10 tfachim, so no longer is the basket going to be considered a Rishus HaYachid, and so now accessing it during the Bein HaShemashos period would not be an Issa D'Oraisa, and therefore one would be able to access it. In a moment we're going to go through Tosfos, and we're going to see as to whether or not in fact it's a Karmelis or it's not a Karmelis. But in the meantime, however, that is a simple pshat in the Braisa. Now, you remember that the Braisa is dealing with the case where the basket is not hanging on the tree, but it's hanging on a peg which is attached to the tree. And now, this is going to be a wonderful example of Tzidei Stadden. And the Gemara now makes exactly this observation. Time of the Nas Yaseid B'ilan, halo na'ata filo matam yitzfachim, ein eruvo eruv. And so the Gemara says, look, the only way that this case is going to work is where the basket's attached to a peg, which is attached to the tree. But if the basket was attached to the tree itself, so then even if it was below 10 fachim, it would not be a good eruv. Now, if it's attached to the tree itself, so this is going to be tzadden, and it's going to be prohibited because it's going to fall under the gzera of being mishtamish b'ilan. And while it's attached to a peg, which is attached to the tree, it's going to be mutter because of tzidei tzadden. If our reading of the braisa is correct, what we have just learned together is that there's a distinction to be made between tzadden and tzidei tzadden. Now, Abaye loves this presentation of the braisa because this is exactly Abaye's point. But if you're Rava, you're going to have a very difficult time with the way we just presented the braisa. So Amra Papa Hacha, so what Papa is now going to do is he's going to explain the Braisa in order to defend Rava. Bikakala Dechuka Askin, and we're talking about where the basket is very, Dechuka, it's very narrow. Rashi describes this as being the opening of the basket being very narrow. And the Bahadu Deshako Le La'erivan, as you're trying to take the contents of the food in that basket, Kamanid Le La'ilan. So by definition, you're going to be shaking the tree, and therefore you're going to be moving the tree itself. So in other words, the case in question over here is that even though it's on a peg, which is on the tree, but because the contents are really hard to get to, and by definition, when you are going to be moving the basket, by definition, you're going to be moving the tree. So this would be a case not of tzidit studen, but actual studen itself. This would be more more analogous to the case of being actually using the side of the tree. This is a way of defending Rava. Okay, it's a little bit of a dechika. It's a little bit of a forced explanation, but it does defend Rava. So it's possible that we can learn the Brisa that way. And in just a moment, the Gemara is going to conclude in terms of what the halach is. We'll get the Gemara's conclusion in just a moment. In the meantime, however, let's just pause for a second, because in the Brisa we learned that if the basket is above 10 tefachim, so it's not going to work as Erev Tchumim, because you can't access it, because it's a Rishus HaYachid, and you're standing in the Rishus HaRabim, you can't transfer from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim. What if it's lower than 10 tefachim? So the Brisa says, once it's lower than 10 tefachim, so now you are, in fact, allowed to access it, and therefore it should work as an Erev Tchumim. Now, I already foreshadowed the question, but we can take a look at the top Tosas over here, where Tosas writes, Kasha, Tosas says it's very difficult. Amai Eruva Eruva Vaha Karmelisu. If it's below 10 tefachim, okay. So it doesn't define itself as a Rishus HaYachid, but it's still a Karmelis. Kevisha Rachva Arbava Sola Tatala Rishus HaRabim. Meaning at this point in time, Masech the Shabbos. So thankfully we know enough regarding the Rishuyos to know that if I have something which has an area 4x4 and it is above 3 tefachim off the ground, but it's not 10 tefachim high, so that has the status of being a Karmelis. This basket should have the status of being a Karmelis, and we know that it's an Isser de Rabbanan to go ahead and to take from a Karmelis to a Rishus HaRabim. And so, how have we gained by virtue of the fact that the basket is below 10 tefachim, but we're still violating the Isser de Rabbanan of transferring from a Karmelis to Rishus HaRabim? So Tosfos over here gives two answers. V'yesh lamar ein Karmelis bekelim depirish bekunchus perakama de mechilten. So we're going to go back to the beginning of the Masechta where Rashi takes a position where that position would be very helpful over here, and that is Rashi says that you cannot construct the domain of a Karmelis from a kli. A Karmelis has to be a real estate. It has to be actual property, but to make Karmelis from a kli, that simply does not work. It has to be karka. That is Shita's Rashi in the beginning of the Masechta, and it happens to work out perfectly over here. So, and he quotes, Gabe Haisa Kupasu Meneches. Okay, go back to Daf Ches, and you're going to see Rashi's position over there. So that's one answer. Inami, but then Tosus gives the second answer, and that is Kerebi Damar Koldavashu Mishum Shvus Lo Gazu Allah Benesh Mashos. So we have to put together a couple of shitas. Let's remind each other. When is the acquisition of the Erev Tchumim going to take place? During the Bein Hashmashos period. We also are going to add to that the shita of Rebbe. Rebbe says that anything that is aser mishum shvos, meaning which is an iser derabanan, no gzerud was made during the Bein Hashmashos. Meaning, let's say that the basket is in fact a karmelis. Meaning, let's not work with Rashi's chiddush of the first parak, and let's assume that the basket is in fact not going to be a karmelis. Nevertheless, I'm sorry, the basket is in fact going to be a karmelis. Nevertheless, at worst, what one is violating when transferring from the basket to the street is going to be an iser derabanan. And look, we're talking about during the Bein Hashmashos period, which is the time in which you're acquiring the Erev Tchomim. And if we subscribe to the Shita of Rebbe, that during the Bein Hashmashos period, so anything that is also Mishum Shus Lo Gazru Bei Rabbanan, the rabbinic prohibitions do not kick in until Shabbos Mamish. So with all that stated, so therefore, even though you are in fact violating an Issa D'Rabbanan, but because it's during the Bein Hashmashos period, so therefore it would be okay, there would be Mutter. That is Tosus' second proposal. Now, if you want to just think about the second answer for just a moment, so if we pause and just thought, you would realize, wait 1 second. And this is Rabbi Kiva Eger's question. You can see it right here on the daf in the Gilyon HaShas, where Rabbi Kiva Eger writes, and I'm reading from the Gilyon HaShas. So, Vitamua, and he says, look, the second answer, it's so interesting and it's so difficult. Deem kein afilo naz yaseid, nami, deshimash bi'ilan have. So, Rakshvus, he says, look, let's take the peg out of the entire equation. Let's have the basket leaning directly against the tree. What is one violating when taking a basket that is directly connected to the tree? So one is violating Hishtamshas B'ilan. What is Hishtamshas B'ilan? It's an Issa D'Rabbanan. So, V'logaz Rinan Bein Hashmashos. And so, if it's an Issa D'Rabbanan, so much like transferring from a Karmelis to Rishus HaRabim is Gzeira D'Rabbanan. And Tosfos is saying, yeah, but this is during the Bein Hashmashos, and we don't have to worry about Gzeira D'Rabbanan during Bein Hashmashos. So likewise, The main concern that we're discussing over here is Ishtamish B'ilan, which is also a Gzera Derabban, and it's something that we don't have to worry about during the Menas Moshes period. And so Rabbi Kiva Eger asks, it's such a wonderful question, such a difficult question, so how is Tosfos' answer going to work now in light of the fact that even if the basket was connected to the tree, so seemingly it should be okay because we are not worried about Gzeiras Derabbanan during the Benesh Moshes period. Okay, and I don't have a proposal for that for the Rabbi Kiva Eger's question right now, but certainly something to think about. We are now going back to the Gemara and the Gemara's conclusion. V'hilchasot tzadim asurin, tzidei tzadim mutarin. The Gemara comes to a very decisive conclusion, and that is, using the side of the tree is incorporated within the Gzeira Derabbanan being Mishamish B'ilan, and it is going to be prohibited. Tzidei tzadim mutarin, however, to make use of something which is connected to a peg, which is connected to the tree, so that, in fact, is going to be mutar, and the Gemara accepts the distinction. Now, who liked this distinction? And that, of course, would be Abaye. And Rava didn't subscribe to this distinction. And so what comes out from the Gemara here is something very odd, and that is, it sounds like we're passing like Abaye over that of Rava. This question was proposed by Tosfos. Tosfos, third Tosfos on the Amud, where basically he says, it's very difficult. The Gemara over here is passing like Abaye, and generally speaking, we say that the halacha is like Rava, with six notable exceptions. That's, of course, the Yalkagam, and this is not one of the Yalkagam. And so Tosfos is left just wondering, how did the Gemara just paskin like Abaye, when meanwhile this is not one of the six notable exceptions? Anyway, continuing in the Gemara, one more follow-up to this discussion, Amar Avashi. Hashad Amar Tzadin Asurin. So now that we've established that making usage of the side of the tree is going to be prohibited, Haidarga, the Midla, let's say you have a ladder that allows you to go up, Lo Linche Inish Adikle, don't have it resting directly on the tree. Davalut Tzadin, because that would be making usage of the side of the tree, which is rabbinically forbidden. Ela linche agavaze levar midikle. So the Gemara says, so if you want to use a ladder on Shabbos, then what you have to do is lean the ladder against a peg that is attached into the tree. Now this is an example of Sidei Tzadin. V'chisalak lo linch kare agavaze ela litnach akanin. And when you go up the ladder, make sure to only step on the rungs of the ladder, but not to step on the actual peg itself. Meaning, once you get to the top of this ladder, make sure not to step on the peg. Stepping on the peg would be a violation of making usage of the tree itself, and that is rabbinically forbidden. So what you have to make sure that you're doing is always make sure that you're on the ladder, which is tzidei tzadin, as long as the ladder is hanging on the peg. Kind of takes us to the end of our first sugya of the daf, and we are now on Kuf Nun Hamun Aleph, and we are continuing with a Mishnah. The Mishnah over here is going to be talking about, what can I do to the food to prepare it for an animal? Obviously, we have a requirement to take that for animals that are in our care and in our ownership, so we have to feed them. Food that was designated for the animal going into Shabbos is not muksa, because you have a requirement to feed the animals. So over here, what the Mishnah is going to be discussing is what can be done in terms of preparing the food for the animal, and there basically are going to be two considerations. Now, I'm going to read the Mishnah, but as we're going to see in the Gemara, we're going to have two different ways to understand the Mishnah. And it's going to be really interesting because these two ways are literally the opposite of one another, meaning they are the positions of understanding the Mishnah are going to be so divergent of one another, they're literally going to be at opposite ends of one another in terms of how to understand the Mishnah. So admittedly, this is going to be a challenging Mishnah, challenging piece of Gemara, as we are going to be going through two totally different ways of how to look at the same Mishnah. So, but let's just get familiar with the Mishnah. Matirin pikiye amir lifne behema. So one is allowed to untie the straw in front of your animal. Umifasfisin esakipin, and one is allowed to scatter, to spread out the kipin. Now kipin, I'm going to leave it undefined right now. I'll say straw, but with a proviso that it may not be straw. Anyway, I have a lo es zirin, and one is not allowed to spread out, one is not allowed to scatter the zirin, which right now I'll translate as cedar wood, some sort of twigs. Again, these words are not totally clear on what they mean. The only thing we know for sure is pikiye, straw. After that, the word keep and the word zirin, they're somewhat strange terms, and you'll see there's a bit of an ambiguity in terms of what exactly they mean. Okay, so what we have so far in the Mishnah is that there's an allowance to untie the straw in front of the animals. One is allowed to scatter, to spread out the kippin in front of the animals, but one is not allowed to do it with the zirin. Now, what Zirin is and what one is not allowed to do with a Zirin, so that's going to be, take a good part of our discussion in the Gemara. One is not allowed to chop up shachas, some sort of animal feed, and charuvin, and the caribs, in front of animals, whether the animals be small or large. Rabbi Yehuda mati b'charuvin ladaka. Rabbi Yehuda says that the carib, so you're allowed to cut up for the smaller animals. Okay. So, in terms of a better understanding of the first part of the Mishnah, so here we're going to now present ourselves with two variant understandings of what the Mishnah means. I'm Rav Huna. Hein hein pekin, hein hein kipin. So, Rav Huna starts off with the following, that the word pekin and the word kipin is both describing straw. Pekin tray, pekin is bundled up two times over. Kipin tlasa, the kipin is bundled up three times over. Three rings of ties that go around it. And zirin de arze, and as far as what zirin is concerned in the Mishnah, that is referring to the cedar wood. Now, I say cedar wood, by the way, it's got to be something a little bit on the softer side, because ultimately we're feeding it to an animal, but it needs a little bit of work, it needs a little bit of preparation in order for the animal to eat it. And here's now going to be the pshat according to Rav Huna. V'hachi kamar, matirin piki amar lifnei behema umifasvesin, v'hu adin lekipin. So what one is allowed to do on Shabbos is that one can untie the straw, whether it's the two-bundle straw or the three-bundle straw, and one can scatter that straw, again, either type the two-bundle or the three-bundle, in front of the animals. That is what the Mishnah starts off by saying, that when it comes to the pekin and the kipin, which are both straw, so you can untie and you can spread it out. But when it comes to the zirin, which is the twigs, the cedar twigs, so there you cannot spread it out and you cannot untie it. Now, that is his understanding. Now, what is the what's the svara that is behind the shita of Rav Huna? The Gemara goes on to explain. So, Amr Chistamai Tamid Rav Huna Kasav Limitrech Buchla Tachinan L'Shavuye Uchla L'Mashavinan. So, Rav Chista says, in explanation of Rav Huna, this is what is the principles of Rav Huna. We have what's called Tircha. We have what's called basically putting in work and effort in order to do what? To enhance the food. Meaning to say that right now the food is totally edible by the animal, but it's not that presentable. And so, Rav Chisda says what Rav Huna's understanding of the Mishnah is that you can work in terms of making the food even more presentable to the animal. And that is what is being described as mitrach be'uchla, to basically endeavor, to effort in terms of making the food more presentable. And that is what Rav Huna says, that's mutter on Shabbat. However, l'shavuye uchla, to take food which is inedible for the animal and to render it edible for the animal, that you're not allowed to do for Shabbos. Now, presumably, the svara behind that is that maybe it's a muksa issue, it's a nolad issue, meaning if it wasn't edible for the animal going into Shabbos, so therefore it could be that it falls under the category of muksa. That's a possible explanation. Truth of the matter is that the Gemara does not explore this anymore. And the truth of the matter is also that Rashi doesn't really say the words muksa, but presumably that's what's behind it. Anyway, so what Rav Huna allows is for enhancing the food, which is already edible. You just simply want to make it more presentable to the animal. And by the way, making it more presentable to the animal, so Rashi writes over here that how is untying it and spreading it out going to make it more presentable? So Rashi says, dekevan, the Rashi, Rashi is a little bit before. Rashi is all the way back in the Mishnah, right? Shekein derech shemefazrim. Rashi divra amaskel mefasvasin. Shekein derech shemefazrim lebehima hasavim v'yafin la ochlan. It makes it better to eat it. Shekeshehim dechukim, because when they are concentrated, meaning when they're all clustered together, mischamimin, so they're still kind of warm. Ve'ena mericha recha kolkach v'katzabahem. They don't give off this nice odor, and so it's not as pleasant to the animal. Okay, so the idea is that according to Rav Huna, so untying and spreading out the straw makes it more favorable to the animal. It enhances the food. It could have been eaten anyway by the animal, but this just simply enhances and makes it better, and that's okay. However, when it comes to the cedar wood, by you untying it, by you spreading it out, so you're rendering something which, quite frankly, was not edible. And the way Rashi describes it is that, generally speaking, it wasn't even designed for the animal going into Shabbos. So you could certainly make the argument that Rashi here is describing muksa, Anyway, so it wasn't designed for the animal going into Shabbos, and by untying it and spreading it out, you're now what is called l'shavuye ochla. You're basically now rendering edible on Shabbos, and that you're not allowed to do. This is all Rav Huna's understanding of the Mishnah. Contrast that with Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda Amar, so Rav Yehuda now, we're going to go back to the Mishnah, and now we're giving our second understanding of the Mishnah, and just as a warning, the definitions are now going to change, meaning Rav Yehuda has different definitions for the Mishnah. Heinein Pekin, Heinein Zirin. So Pekin, which is the first food that's mentioned in the Mishnah, and Zirin, which is the third food mentioned in the Mishnah, so they're in fact one and the same, meaning they're both describing the straw. And Pekin Trei, Zirin Tlasa. Pekin is straw that is bundled with two ties. Zirin is straw that's bundled with three ties. And so now we are saying that Pekin and Zirin are both straw. Just a question of how many ties going around the bundle. So what's that middle? What's the keepin? Keepin de arze. So the middle one is the cedar wood and v'hachi kamar. And now with all that stated, what do we gain? Meaning obviously aside from having different definitions of what the Mishnah means, what do we gain with such a pshat? So matir and pekiya amir lifnei behema. So one is allowed to untie the straw in front of the animal, ava pispuse lo, but one cannot spread out in front of the animal. Vikipin pispuse nami mifasfasin. Now, when it comes to the cedar wood, so that you're allowed to scatter and spread out in front of the animal, ava lo hazirin lefasfas. But the zirin, which is also straw, meaning in addition to the pekin being straw, the zirin, which is also straw, so that you're not allowed to scatter. Ela lahatir. The only thing you could do with that is just simply untie it. This is Rav Yehuda's reading of the Mishnah. Now, let's understand what the principles are according to Rav Yehuda. Amareva my time to Rav Yehuda, kasever shivuya ochle mishavinan, mitchech ba'och halotachinan. It is literally the mirror opposite of what Rav Huna said. According to Rav Yehuda, what you're allowed to do in the Mishnah is, you're allowed to take a food which is inedible and render it edible. That's the allowance that's given in the Mishnah. But if all you're doing is just enhancing the food, meaning the food that it was edible beforehand, you're just giving it an enhanced state so that it's more presentable to the animal, that the Chachamim did not allow, and that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. And so, in terms of now saying Pshat in the Mishnah, so, when you look back at the Mishnah, when it says Matirin Pekiye, Amir, you're allowed to untie it, yeah, because in its tied state, the animal simply couldn't eat it. So now by untying it, so now you're making it something which is edible to the animal. Mifasfasin asakipin, that's the next line of the Mishnah, so now it's no longer talking about straw. That's talking about the cedar wood. And the only way that the animal is going to eat it is only if it's spread out. So that's why it's allowed, because that is amashve uchla. You're rendering it edible. Avalo is a zirin, but you're not allowed to spread out the zirin. That's going back to the straw. Because spreading out the straw does not render it edible. All you're doing is just simply enhancing it, and you're making it better, which you're not allowed to do. Okay, so this is how Rav Yehuda reads the Mishnah, and it comes out now according to Rav Yehuda that the only thing the Chachamim allowed you to do is render the food edible, but if all you're doing is just tircha to enhance the food, that you're not allowed to do. So we have now two totally different ways to both explain the Mishnah and understand the Mishnah, meaning the definitions of the Mishnah and what is the dynamics behind the reasons of the Mishnah, and they're diametrically opposed to one another. So according to Rav Yehuda, tircha's mutter, and to render food edible is aser. And according to Rav Yehuda, just the opposite. Rendering a food edible is mutter. And tircha, just enhancing the food, is going to be aser. And from this point going forward, now what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to go through its classic, I'm going to quote Mishnahs, I'm going to quote Braisas, and we're going to see of these two interpretations of the Mishnah, which one seems to conform better with the wording of these other sources. So first we're going to be quoting a Mishnah. And not just any Mishnah, but our Mishnah. All we're doing now is just reading on in the Mishnah. Ein raskin es shachas vetzach ruvin lifnei behema ben daka ben gasa. One is not allowed to chop up the animal fodder and the caribs in front of an animal, regardless of whether the animal is small or large. My love charuvin dumi the shachas. Now these two items made mention over here. One is caribs and the other is fodder. Now mashachas derechichi. Generally speaking, the fodder is soft. Af charuvin derechichi. So we're talking about the carib that's soft. Alma, And what the Tanakam is saying now is that I cannot chop it up in front of the animal. Now, if it's soft, what does that mean? It means it's already edible. What's chopping up going to do? It's just going to enhance. And what the Tanakam is saying is that tircha, just to enhance the food, that's going to be prohibited. Amalo tarchina beuchla, v'tiyufta deravuna. And so, a simple reading of the Mishnah, assuming our assumption is right, is that I can't do a tircha in order to improve the food, and this would be a support for Rav Huna. So, amalacha Rav Huna, sorry, and this would be a question on Rav Huna, because Rav Huna allowed for tircha. So, amalacha Rav Huna, Rav Huna would say, lo shachas dumin decharuvin. Now, let's go back to the Mishnah. And we assume that they're both soft, and he'll say, no, I'll just assume the opposite. They're both hard. Because macha ruvin da kusha, because typically speaking, the carob is hard, right? Remember back in the days when on Tu B'Shvat, they gave us a charuvim, and literally, just you couldn't get through it. You bit on it, and you're wondering why are they giving it to you. So the charuvim are hard. Af shachas de akushe. So we're going to assume that the fodder now is hard as well. Hey, mishkachala. Now the Gemara says, what do you mean the fodder is hard? Fodder typically is not hard. Okay, I'm not on the farm, so I'm taking the Gemara's word for it. It's typically not hard. So the Gemara says, be'ili zutre. So the Gemara says, you're right, it's not hard. But when it comes to small donkeys, so they are young, they're very delicate, and for fodder, it needs to be cut up. They cannot eat it until it has been cut up. So for them, it's considered hard, meaning that they simply will not be rendered edible until after you cut it up. Okay, that could be a pshat. Anyway, so we sidestepped our first kasha against Rav Huna, because even though the Mishnah sounds like all we're doing is a tircha to enhance the food, we could argue that no, where the Tanakhama is talking about actually making it edible. Tashma, the Gemara says this is going to be round number two. Rav Yehuda matir b'charuvim ledaka. Rav Yehuda in our Mishnah says that when it comes to charuvim, he allows you to cut it up for a small animal. So ledaka and legasalo. Now, clearly, what he means to say is only for a small animal and not for a large animal. Now the Gemara makes its argument. Now, let's assume as follows, that according to the Tanakhama, so you're not allowed to enhance the food, but what you are allowed to do is mashve. You can render a food edible. And so that is the position of the Tanakhama. And Rashi spends a lot of time over here going over the idea that once we assume that the Tanakhama subscribes to one line of reasoning, so Rav Yehuda is working within the same line of reasoning as well. And you can see Rashi over here, who spent a lot of time explaining that this has to be the case. So let's just assume that that's in fact the case. So once the Chachamim now are saying that the only thing you're allowed to do is render a food edible, so Haina Dekama Rav Yehuda. So now we understand Rav Yehuda's response. Acharuvim ladaka nami shivuyi ochluhu. Well, if you're talking about boxer and you're talking about a smaller animal is going to have a tough time getting through the boxer until you cut it up. So that also is considered mashva ocha. And I understand also now what the distinction is according to Rabbi Yehuda for a small animal and large animal. Meaning a small animal, he won't be able to eat it until you cut it up. And for a large animal, so you would be able to eat it. So the Gemara says all this makes a sense. But Eliyam are Tanakhama Savar Shavui Uchala Meshavinan, Mitrach Buchla Mitarchinan. But if the Tanakhama is of the opinion that you can't render a food edible, but what you are allowed to do is enhance the food. So Rav Yehuda Matu Becharuvim Ladaka, Koshekin Lagasa. Rav Yehuda says that enhancing the food, well, I'm enhancing the food for the smaller animal. Well, if that's true, certainly you're allowed to enhance the food for a larger animal as well. Meaning if what Rav Yehuda is doing is saying that no, that tircha for the small animal is okay, what difference would it be between enhancing the food for a small animal as opposed to a large animal? There would be no reason to make any distinction between the two. And once he allows for the small, certainly he should allow for the large as well. And so what it would seem to be is that it's much easier to explain the Mishnah in line with the Shita of Rav Yehuda, that what is forbidden is rendering the food edible, as opposed to what Rav Huna suggests, that the Mishnah is prohibiting the tircha of the food. So the Gemara says, okay, but over here as well, misvaras daka daka mamish my daka gasa. So the Gemara says, well, maybe not. Maybe that when the Mishnah uses the word daka, doesn't not mean a small animal, but actually the word daka is referring to a large animal. Now that's a little bit difficult, and the Gemara is going to acknowledge that in just a moment, but umay kari le daka, and as far as it being called daka, didaika ba'uchle, it just simply means that it's discerning in what it eats. And that's why The daka over here just simply means that if without the enhancement, it just will be too discerning and it won't eat it. So the Gemara says, okay, but still, that's really a difficult pshat. Hamitani reisha bein daka bein gasa mechlal de Reb Yehuda daka mamish kamar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but look at the Tanakama. The Tanakama is clearly making a distinction between a small animal and a large animal. And so when Rabbi Huda is retorting back to the Tanakama, he clearly is differentiating between the small animal and the large animal. And in the context of the Mishnah, the words Daka and Gasa is going on the size of the animal, Daka being a small animal, Gasa being a large animal. And it's really hard to argue that when Rabbi Huda uses the words Daka, he's talking about a large animal, but making a difference between the large animal that's discerning versus a large animal that's not discerning. Kasha, the Gemara acknowledges, yeah, this is a difficult read of the Braisa. I'm sorry, it's a difficult read of the Mishnah, but nevertheless, at least it can be entertained. And so the Gemara says that at least for the time being, we do have a defense of Rav Huna. Tashma, the Gemara now is going to go through two more rounds of this, in which we're going to be quoting from a Mishnah and a Braisa. Next one's a Mishnah. The one following is going to be a Braisa. And again, to either support either position, either Rav Huna or Rav Yehuda. So, Tashma, the Mechatchin, Esad Blun, Lefnei Behema, Esad Neveh, Lefnei Klavim. This is a Mishnah coming up in tomorrow's daf. The Mishnah will introduce us to the idea that if you have a gourd, all right, a really hard gourd, so you can cut it up in front of an animal on Shabbos, and if you have a nevela, an animal that died without a shechita, which we can't eat, but the animal's allowed to eat, their dog's allowed to eat it, so you can cut it up for your dog on Shabbos. This is coming up in the Mishnah in tomorrow's daf. In the meantime, what are we talking about over here? Are we talking about to be mashva ochla? Are we talking about rendering it edible? Or are we talking about tircha? Are we just simply talking about making an enhancement only so that it's more presentable? And this is now, again, going to be exactly the debate in the Gemara. My love, dulum dumi de nevela, my nevela de rechiche, afdulun de rechiche. So presumably, let's start with a nevela. We know nevela is soft, so therefore we're going to assume the gourd is soft as well. Ama tarchina ba'uchla. And so over here we're talking about an enhancement, v'tiyufta de Rav Yehuda. And the Mishnah is clearly allowing it, which means that enhancing food is going to be mutter, and this would be a wonderful support for Rav Huna, and it would be challenging to Rav Yehuda. So Amalecha Rav Yehuda, so Rav Yehuda would respond and say, lo, nevela dumia de deluin. No, just the opposite. The nevela over here is similar to deluin. Ma deluin da ashune, af nevela da ashune. The gourd is hard, and the nevela in question is also hard as well. Now, nevela being hard, you're talking about the carcass of an animal. What's hard about the meat of the carcass of an animal? Behechi mishkacha lo bebasar pile. So the Gemara says elephant meat. Elephant meat is very tough. Again, I have no idea, but the Gemara assumes it's a tough piece of meat. Inami, Bigur Yasa, Zutre, or the Gemara says, oh, we're talking about a tough relative to the consumer, meaning that we're not talking about a dog that's older, we're talking about a young pup. And as such a young dog, a puppy, so it will have difficulty getting through the meat of the nevela until you cut it up for him. So in other words, this is not just simply enhancing the food, but this is actually rendering it edible by cutting it up. And so it could be that that's what the Mishnah means. And so, again, the Gemara now has defended the position of Rav Yehuda. Tashma, and here we go, one more round. And this is going to be a braisa. Dini Rav Chana min Arda, mefarchinan tevin v'aspasta u'me'arvdin. So one is allowed on Shabbos to cut up both straw and fodder, an animal fodder, and mix them together. So amar tarchina ba'uchla. So again, the Gemara's assumption is that straw is already edible. And the only thing we're doing by chopping it up is just simply enhancing it, making it more presentable for the animal. And so this would be a strong support for Rav Huna, that tircha with the food would be mutter. So the Gemara says, and obviously would be difficult for Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara's response is, again, let's defend Rav Yehuda. Tevin betiv nasarya, so it could be that the straw in question over here is already spoiled, and so therefore it's just simply not edible until you cut it up. And aspasta be'ile zutre. And as far as the aspasta is concerned, we're talking about small donkeys. Small donkeys are going to have difficulty even eating the straw, and so therefore this would be a situation of rendering the food edible, not just enhancing the food. Okay, and Adkan, that takes us now to the end of our second sugya of today. So the question of how to understand our Mishnah when the Mishnah allows us to do certain activities with a food in order to give it to your animal. And so the Mishnah itself was not particularly clear about which activities would be mutter for what food, and also the Mishnah uses terms that are not abundantly clear what they mean. And so what we have in the Gemara are literally two diametrically opposed positions of what is pshat in the Mishnah. According to Rav Huna, what the Mishnah allows you to do is only enhancements to the food. That means to say that one can improve the situation of a food, that's tircha, but to render a food edible, that is not going to be allowed. That is Rav Huna's reading of the Mishnah, and then all the cases in the Mishnah conform to that, to those basic rules, whereas according to Rav Yehuda, it's just the opposite, that the only thing you're allowed to do on Shabbos is render a food edible. But on Shabbos, what you're not allowed to do is tircha, it's extra work just to enhance the food, make it more presentable to the animal. And so literally, these two pshatim are diametrically opposed to one another, and what the Gemara's been doing with four different sources, three Mishnayos, two from our Mishnah, one from the upcoming Mishnah, and then another Braisa saw whether or not the position of Rav Yehuda, Rav Huna is more defensible. We had two Braisas that were supportive of Rav Yehuda. We have two Braisas that were supportive of Rav Huna, and the Gemara basically left it as a stalemate. We continue now with the next Mishnah, and this next Mishnah also is going to be. Challenging with basically the same idea, in that we know what the general topic of this Mishnah is, but a lot of the terms in the Mishnah are not easily definable. And basically what this Mishnah is going to talk about is feeding the animal on Shabbos. Now, when we say feeding an animal on Shabbos, as we're going to get to in the Gemara in just a little bit, so you're allowed to feed animals that belong to you. In fact, you're obligated to feed animals that belong to you. But nevertheless, to what degree are you allowed to feed the animal? Putting the food in front of the animal certainly would be okay, but are you allowed to do any kind of force feeding of the animal? So that's going to be our Mishnah's discussion. Ein ovsin es hagamal, velo darsin. So one cannot aggressively stuff the food down the throat of the camel, and velo darsin. Now, darsin also is forcing the food down, perhaps just a little bit less aggressively. Aval mal itin. But one is allowed to do is mal itin. Now, that is obviously the least aggressive form of it. And presumably what mal itin means is just simply putting the food in front of the camel. So, ovsin and dorsin are prohibited activities. In other words, those are different types of force feeding of the camel. But mal itin would be mutter. And the easiest way to say it is just simply you are presenting it in front of the camel. Ein ma'amir nesagalim. Now, as far as the calves are concerned, now I know we're introducing ourselves to new words over here, but with every animal, so the verb that's used to describe it is going to be a little bit different. So when it comes to the eagle, when it comes to the calf, so the word is ma'amirim. So ein ma'amirim nesagalim. So when it comes to the agalim, so again, this aggressive kind of force feeding is prohibited. Aval mal itin. But what one is allowed to do is malitim, and again, presumably that just simply means leaving the food in front of the calf. Umahalkitin latarnagolim. Now, as far as your chickens are concerned, so you can be mahalkate. Again, a term that is difficult to describe exactly what that means. When we get to the Gemara, we're going to try to understand it better. Venosimayim lamorsan. And one can add water to the grain. And we'll discuss in tomorrow's daf the issue of kneading. Avalo govlin, the Mishnah says, now you're not allowed to knead it together. One cannot put water in front of the bees and the birds in the birdhouse. In other words, the shovach were the birdhouses that people had. The birds that came into the birdhouses were not necessarily your birds, meaning you just simply had a birdhouse on your property. However, the Gemara spends a number of places talking about how when the birds are on your property, so they are shayach to you, even though you don't have full ownership of them. If somebody comes into your property and takes one of those birds, that is going to be a din gzela midrabanan. The Gemara describes it as being one of the institutions that were made in order to create shalom bein between people. Anyway, but typically these birds are not your responsibility. So the Mishnah says you're not allowed to put water in front of the bees and in front of these birds. Aval nosen lifnei ivzim v'tarnagolim lifnei yonei hadarsios. However, one is allowed to put water in front of chickens and in front of these domesticated types of birds because they are in fact yours. They're in fact your responsibility, and so therefore you feed them. Actually, the Mishnah says you water them. In a moment, we're going to see the Gemara together. The Gemara wants to know, how come we're just talking about water? We should be talking about food as well. Okay, and we'll come back to that point. Anyway, so there are a number of terms to define in our Mishnah. So we start with the first term of the Mishnah when it comes to the camel of Ein Ov Sin. What does that mean, my Ein Ov Sin? So I'm Rav Yehuda, Ein Ov Sin Lo Avos Besoch Me'aha. You basically cannot treat the camel like a trough. Basically stuffing the food into the camel, enlarging the animal. Umi ikaki agavna, the Gemara says, now is that existing? The Gemara says, sure it exists. Kadama Rav Yirmiya, midifti li didi chazili hutaya. I saw this Arab merchant, the achle kura, the atine kura. Now the merchant stuffed the animal with a core of grain. Now that happens to be a tremendous amount, and the Gemara over here may be involved in a little bit of hyperbole, but the idea is that it got stuffed really well to the point in which the animal was so enlarged that now you were able to basically put on a core on top of the animal. You basically increase the size of the animal and the loading capacity on top of the animal. Okay, so basically the Gemara says, yes, we've seen this. So, Ein Ma'amir, and now, as we move on to the calf, so when it comes to the calf, so you're not allowed to do this Ma'amir, and now what we know for sure is that it is an aggressive type of feeding. Ezu Hamra, Ezu Hu'alata. So when dealing with the calf, so we said ma'amirim, so that is something that you're not allowed to do, but halata, right, that is something you are allowed to do, and we are looking now for precise definitions. Am Rav Yehuda, hamra l'makom sheino yechol l'hachzir, halata l'makom sheyechol l'hachzir. According to Rav Yehuda, both are describing force feeding. It just happens to be that hamra is talking about feeding it and stuffing it to a place where the animal cannot regurgitate, as opposed to halata, where you're putting it in the throat, but the animal could regurgitate. Rav Chista Amar Idibid Lamakum Shein Yechol Lahachzer. Rav Chista says no. Both are describing putting it so far down the throat that the animal will not be able to regurgitate. And the difference is Vahamra Bikli Halata Biyad. It's just a question of whether you're doing it with some sort of instrument or you're doing it with your hand. Using an instrument would be Aser. Using your hand would be Mutter. And so we have now two different ways to explain the Mishnah vis-a-vis the calf and the aggressive feeding of ma'amirin versus the less aggressive malita, and what the difference between the two is. Mesav Rav Yosef, so a challenge. Mahalkatin latarnagol mein sarach lamar shemalkitim. So here in the Brisa, it is a tosefta. So it says that when it comes to the tarnagolim, you could do the mahalkatin and you could do malkitin. Now I know it sounds very similar to one another, but one must be aggressive and one is less aggressive. And now you understand the progression. Mahalkitin you're allowed to do, and if you're allowed to do that, I don't even have to say that Malkitin would be okay. It's less aggressive. Ein Malkitin liyone shabach liyone aliyah ve'ein tzarech lomar she'ein Mahalkitin. Now, when it comes to the yone shabach and yone aliyah, and those are birds that are in your possession but not really in your ownership, so there you can't do any kinds of these kinds of feedings. You can't do Malkitin, and you certainly can't do Mahalkitin, which is more aggressive. So my Mahalkitin, my Malkitin. So okay, great. We have a braisa. What is the braisa talking about? Ilema mahalkitin desafali beyadam mahalkitin deshadile kamayu. So the Gemara says, so let's suggest that mahalkitin means that you're stuffing it down the throat of the bird. And mahalkitin just simply means that you're laying it in front of the bird. So the Gemara says, but I don't understand that. Michal diyone shavach yone aliyah mishte kamayu namilo. Well, then you're saying that when it comes to the birds of the birdhouse, you can't even put food in front of the bird. And the Gemara says, and that's hard to imagine. It's hard to understand. El alav, so rather the pshat must be mahalkitin l'makom she'inechol l'hachzir, mahalkitin l'makom she'inechol l'hachzir. So mahalkitin means that you're stuffing it so far down it can't regurgitate, and mahalkitin means that you didn't stuff it that far down and it could regurgitate. Michlal dehamra'a b'kli. Now, if all this is correct, now we're going to take our what we think are correct definitions and bring them back to the Mishnah and plug them back into the Mishnah. So now when it comes to the calf, so what we're saying now with the calf is that ma'amirin is something that you can't do, mal'itim is something that you can do. And now we're left to assume that what is the difference between hamra'a, so hamra'a must be with a kli, meaning it has to be something that's even more aggressive, but you have to do Rav Yehuda. Now if that's right, that makes Rav Yehuda's pshat very difficult, because Rav Yehuda said the difference is force feeding it where it can't regurgitate versus feeding where it can regurgitate. And the way now we argued, using our definitions that we learned from the Tosefta, plugging it back into the Mishnah, what it sounds like is a Hamra is even a level above that, which means using an instrument, and that supports Rav Chista's understanding of the Mishnah, but not Rav Yehuda's understanding of the Mishnah. Amlecha Rav Yehuda, to which Rav Yehuda would say to you, no. You could, because the terms that we defined in the Tosefta, they're not correct. L'olam, mehalkatin desaf libiyadai, mehalkatin deshalei kamayhu. So, the mehalkatin of the Braisa of the Tosefta is talking about where you stuffed it down the throat. And the mehalkatin is talking about where you just put it in front of the bird. And I know what your question was. Well, you're not allowed to do that with a bird of the birdhouse. So the Gemara says, yeah, actually, that's exactly what is being said. Because you have to look at what you're responsible to feed and what you're not responsible to feed. A bird in your ownership, meaning a domesticated bird in your ownership, or an animal that's in your ownership, so there you have an obligation to feed. But when it comes to the birds that are just simply passing through your birdhouse, so you don't have an obligation to feed those birds, and so therefore, yes, even just simply putting food in front of them is going to be aser. Kid Tanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa. No, some mizonos lefnei kalav, no some mizonos lefnei chazir. That you can, you're allowed to put food in front of a dog, but not in front of a pig. Oh, ma'afresh means elazem. What's the difference? Mizonos sam zem mizonos of alecha, v'ze ein mizonos of alecha. The difference being is that with a dog, you're obligated to feed. With a pig, you're not obligated to feed. Now, as far as the pig is concerned, what does that mean? It means you're not owning the pig. What if you did own the pig? Rashi writes over here, Chazir and Mezonosam Alecha, Arur Yehudi Shigadol Chazir. So Rashi says that there's a general curse on any Jew that raises pigs for a living. And so therefore, no Jew would be owning a pig. That's the assumption the Gemara is making, and Rashi is basing that in the Gemara in Sota. Anyway, so what comes out over here is that, yeah, so now we have a viable pshat in the Tosefta. That when the Tosefta says that the aggressive feeding is just simply shoving the food down the throat, the less aggressive is just putting it in front. I, by Yonei Shavach, you're not even allowed to put in the food in front of the Yonei Shavach. And to that, the Gemara's reply is, that's right, because Ein Mizonosav Alecha, you're not obligated to feed it. So Amar Rav Ashi Masnis Namideka. In fact, Rav Ashi says, now I'm going to go back to the Mishnah, and I'm going to read the Mishnah really carefully, and we're going to see that that's pretty much what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says you cannot put water in front of the bees in front of these birds that are in your birdhouse, but are not yours. But you could put water in front of chickens and in front of the domesticated birds that are in fact in your possession. My time allowed me shum dahani mizonosad alecha v'hanil ein mizonosad alecha. And the distinction seems to be pretty clear. That the ones that you're obligated to feed, so that for that you are going, you can give them water. The ones you're not obligated to feed, you can't feed them water. So the Gemara says, okay, all that would have been a wonderful pshat in the Mishnah, but ulatamech, but the Gemara says, but let me ask you a simple question. If the whole point of the Mishnah is making a distinction between those who you're obligated to feed versus those you're not obligated to feed, why is the Mishnah only discussing water? Ma'ir yamaya, afilu chiti sarinami. Let the Mishnah talk about actual wheat and barley, meaning feed. So elashani mai deshchicha ba'agma. So the Gemara says that it could very well be that the reason why it was discussing water is for a different reason, and that is that water is so accessible that simply giving them water is so unnecessary, that could be the point behind the Mishnah, and not necessarily your conclusion. So the only thing that we really knocked out was Rav Ashi's reading of the Mishnah, supporting our understanding of the Tosefta, but when all said and done, our understanding of the Tosefta could in fact be correct, and so what we have over here is successfully defended the Shita of Rav Yehuda. Darsh Rav Yonah Apischa de Benisiyah Ma'yachsiv, the Pasuk in Mishlei, Yadea Tzadik Din Dalim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows very well the impoverished, so Yodea HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bekelv Shem Nezonosav Mu'atim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that the dogs, they're not getting fed that often. So as a chesed to the dogs, Kadosh Baruch Hu made their digestive system really slow, where it's going to take 3 days for food to digest in the stomach. Now, how do we know it takes 3 days? We have a mission in Olos, Kedinan. Kamatisha achilaso b'meyav yehei tamei b'kelev gimel yamim me'es la'es. The Mishnah over here, and a really unpleasant Mishnah in terms of the content of the Mishnah. Mishnah is describing a dog that went ahead and ate human remains. Now, while the dog is alive, the human remains inside is not going to give off tuma because this is what's called tuma balua. However, if the dog were to die, so no longer is the dog going to be a barrier for that tuma, and that tuma is going to now spread out. Because remember, when it comes to the remains of a human body, so there you have tumas ohel. And so the tumah now is just simply going to go up, hit a roof, come back down again over the entirety of the roof. How long before the human remains are digested within the dog? The Mishnah says 3 24-hour periods. So this is a source that teaches us that the digestion of the dog is really slow. Now, as far as birds and fish are concerned, the amount of time for it to go into a fire and incinerate, meaning a much briefer period of time for digestion. Anyway, okay, so that just simply says that the digestive system of the dog is really slow, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the impoverished state of the dog. And that's the chesed given to him, and that the dog can eat and it'll last for a while. I'm Rav Hamnuna Shmamina Orechara. So Rav Hamnuna says that Derech Eretz Lemishde Umsa Lekava. A person should give a piece of meat to a dog, knowing that the dog does not have many people feeding it. Parenthetically, by the way, the ownership of dogs and having dogs as pet is a more modern phenomena sociologically. Right? It was only the last, I don't know historically exactly how long, but for most of world history, nobody had dogs as pets. Anyway, so give some meat to the dog. V'kama, how much meat should you be given? Amar Rav Mari, mashach udne, an ear's length of the of meat. V'chutra abasrei, and make sure after you feed the dog to give it a good hit. And the reason why he explains Rashi is because if you don't hit the dog, it's going to follow you home, and you don't want that. Meaning you do want to feed the dog, but on the other hand, you also do not want the dog coming home with you. Hani milibadaber, that's only in the forest, meaning outside of town. Avav emasa, but if you're in town, lo. The asla misrach. If you feed the dog in town, even with a good hit, the dog is going to follow you home, and so you're going to be introduced now to another consumer in your house and something that you don't want. And so in the city, do not feed the dog. Amar Papa Leis Da'anya Mikaba Veleis Da'atir Mechazira. Nobody is poorer than the dog. Nobody is wealthier than the Chazir. Rashi says, Shekol Maicha Ra'ilo Umotzi Lechol Va'af Machin Lo Harbei. A pig is concerned and is not really judicious in terms of what it eats. It'll eat pretty much anything. People will feed it. So anyway, so the contrast between a dog and a pig. And obviously this Gemara is ripe to darshan outside of the simple pshat, but in the meantime we're going to continue just finishing up to the two dots. Tanya Kavasi to Rav Yehuda. After all is said and done, so now we learned in our Mishnah that when it comes to a calf, so ein ma'amirin, so you're not allowed to do this forceful, aggressive type of feeding. So what does that mean, and what's the difference between ma'amirin and halata? So we had two pshatim in the Gemara, Rav Yehuda and Rav Chista. The Gemara now is going to go all the way back there and give a brisa supporting Rav Yehuda. Ezu amra ve'ezu halata amra marvitza. One has the animal crouch. Upokes es pia. Umachila karshina mamayim bavas achas. And in stuffing both the animal fodder, the vetch, and the water at the same time. Halata, as opposed to halata, which is ma'achila ma'umad, the animal is going to be standing, meaning not in a crouched position. Umashke ma'umad, and you're going to have a drink while standing. And the water goes in, and the vetch goes in, but they don't go in at the same time. So, but anyway, what comes out over here is the more aggressive form of feeding is where basically it cannot regurgitate the food. So basically what you're doing now is that you're having a crouch. You're basically holding its mouth open with this pokase, but it's not able to regurgitate the food, as opposed to the other force feeding where you're still doing it with your hand, but you are doing it in a way that the animal could regurgitate if it wanted to. Okay, and this supports Rav Yehuda's distinction of the difference between Hamra'a and Hal'ata of the Mishnah. This is a good stopping point. Tomorrow we begin with Mahalkatin L'Tarnagolim. Okay, and let's just quickly recap the daf today. We finished off yesterday's discussion regarding Staden, State Aid Staden. The Isser D'Rabbanan of not being Mishamish B'Ilan certainly applies to the top of the tree. What about the sides of the tree itself? And what about something that is connected to the side of the tree? So that is, the side of the tree is what's called staden. That is which connected to the side of the tree is what's called tzidei Stodden. And so we had a machlokes between Abai and Rava. Rava was of the position that whoever asr Stodden is going to asr Tzidet Stodden. Whoever is going to be Matr Stodden is going to be Matr Tzidet Stodden. Abai says not necessarily. By Stodden, everyone agrees that that is included in the Gzera Rabbanan. You cannot be Meshamish on the side of the tree. But Tzidet Stodden, that's the machlokes tonight. And we saw a Mishnah in Erevin by Erev Tchumim that seems to make this distinction clear, although the Gemara says you could read that Mishnah in Erevin a little bit differently, and you could defend Rava. Gemara's conclusion, Stodden is Aser, Seated Stodden is Mutter. If you have a ladder and you want to climb up the ladder and you want to lean it against a tree, that's Stodden, that's going to be Aser. If you have a peg attached to the tree and you're now leaning the ladder on the peg, that's Seated Stodden, and that would be Mutter. The Mishnah on Kuf Nun Hey Amud Aleph goes through various types of preparation that you could do for the food when you're feeding your animal. And so the Mishnah allows for the untying of the straw, and after that, it's not particularly clear what else is going on in the Mishnah. And in the Gemara, we had two diametric viewpoints of how to understand the Mishnah. And I'll just take it from the standpoint of the Gemara. According to the Shita of Rav Huna, two, enhance the food, meaning the food is already edible, and all you're doing is just simply enhancing the food, so that, according to Rav Huna, is going to be mutter. However, if the food is rendered, is already inedible, and you want to render it edible on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, that you're not allowed to do, that's shivui uchla, and that you're not allowed to do, and Rav Huna then reads all the cases in the Mishnah based on these principles. On the other hand, Rav Yehuda says exactly the opposite. Rav Yehuda says that if it's tircha, meaning the food is already edible and all you're doing is just enhancing the food, that is going to be aser. Whereas if you are rendering the food edible, so that's something which is going to be mutter. And again, he reads the Mishnah based on his principles. And the Gemara's discussion was the back and forth using Mishnayos and a Braisa to see which position is more defensible in the reading of these Mishnayos and Braisas. As we turn now to the Amud Beis, we're talking about force-fitting a camel, force-feeding a calf, force-feeding birds, and an aggressive force-feeding is going to be prohibited. A less aggressive force-feeding is going to be permitted, but after that, in the Mishnah itself, it was not perfectly clear. What does that mean? Aggressive force-feeding, less aggressive force-feeding. We had two pshatim amongst the Amoraim. Rav Yehuda said that the word hamra'a means that you're force-feeding it to the point where it can't regurgitate, and the less aggressive is where you're force-feeding it, but it could regurgitate. Rav Chista says, no, both are describing where you're force-feeding it to a point that it can't regurgitate. It just happens to be the difference with whether you're using an instrument or whether you're using your hand. And then the subsequent discussion of the Gemara in terms of which position is more defensible based on the reading of our Mishnah, based on a Tosefta that we saw as well. And again, the Gemara did not necessarily arrive at any particular conclusion from the reading of the Braisa, from the reading of the Tosefta. But the Gemara, however, did conclude on this matter on the bottom of the Amud. The Gemara quoted a Braisa that is fully supportive of Rav Yehuda, in that the more aggressive force-feeding that's prohibited is where you're stuffing it so far down that it cannot regurgitate. Masha Enkein, if you're just feeding the animal, but it could regurgitate the food, that is the less aggressive and therefore permitted type of feeding that one can do on Shabbos.